I remember when I was in high school, there was a very popular TV movie, at least among high school boys, called Brian's Song. It was about a football player named Brian Piccolo who had died of a disease. And the movie began, and I remember this because all of us imitated it at school the next day, various lines from the movie, but it began by saying, Hemingway said that all true stories end in death. This is a true story. It was a very powerful beginning because it let you know, and then it cut into two young football players playing, that eventually that was not only the end of that story, but of every story. And I bring this up because the Torah is a true story, and it quite literally ends in death. When we finish the Torah, as we do over this cycle, and celebrate in Simchat Torah the beginning of a new cycle of reading, we end the Torah with the death of Moses. Those are the last words. And even though you might think something beginning in the creation of the world shouldn't end in the death of any single individual, it reminds me of those words, that this is a true story. Which leads us to the inevitable question, why does Moses have to die? To say that all true stories end in death is to assert a fact, but not to give a reason. And it is worth thinking about why. Not why does Moses have to die now in particular, although that surely will come into it, but why does he have to die at all? Given how much he has offered to Israel and to the world. And I'd like to approach the question this morning by way of a wonderful, learned, and fascinating book written by a scholar at Harvard who actually has come and has spoken at Sinai Temple. He spoke here a few years ago. His name is John Levinson, and he made his reputation with the first book of his career called Sinai and Zion. It's a fairly short paperback, and it contains in it a great deal of fascinating information and true wisdom. And he builds the book on the two mountains of the Jewish tradition. There is the mountain of Sinai in the wilderness and the mountain of Zion, also called Mount Moriah, in the land. And he asks the question, why was the Torah not given on the same mountain that the temple was built? Why give the Torah in the wilderness and build the temple on Zion? Aren't they, in some sense, supposed to be the same? And his answer is no, that they represent two very different traditions. You have in Sinai the wilderness and Moses and wandering. You have in Zion the land and King David and order and stability. Moses and David are very different personalities, as we'll come to in a minute. But so is the mountain in the wilderness and the mountain in the land. Remember, Moriah is where, according to our tradition, Abraham took Isaac up to the mountain and bound him, and where Isaac was saved. But Moses has nothing to do with the Temple Mount. After all, he never walks into the land. And David has nothing to do with Sinai, not with the presence of the mountain, although he does with the traditions there. One is the Torah, Sinai. One is the temple, Zion. One is the source, Sinai. The other, in some ways, the realization, Zion. One is lost. Every week, someone has a new theory about where Sinai is, but nobody knows. The other is in some sense too familiar. Everybody knows where it is, and everybody wants a piece of it. And both of those traditions are embodied in the personalities that are identified with each of them. Think of the difference between Moses and David. Moses, who is the revolutionary, is strong and clear and straight and even stern. David is crafty and subtle and artistic, anything but straight. And if you ask yourself why, it may be because Moses spends most of his life dealing with God. Yes, he has to deal with the people, but his principal partner is God. David, as a king, surely has contact with God, but he spends most of his life trying to navigate, negotiate, fight back, and rule the people Israel. And so there are, Levinson points out, these two very different traditions and very different ideas. The land requires stability and government and judges and settlement and order. In the wilderness, you're basically herding together a tribe and making sure that they can follow through so that they can get to the land and settle down. In the Bible, there is a classic clash between the pastoral life, the shepherd, and the settled life of the farmer. And in some ways, even though David was himself a shepherd, that is embodied in this difference of traditions between the wandering tribe of Israel and the settled land of the kingdom of David. We try in our prayers and in our traditions to harmonize the two. We say, Ki mitzion teitze Torah. Very interesting. We say, from Zion will go forth the Torah. We don't say from Sinai. Why? Because we're trying to bring together the Torah and Zion. We want a settled land of Israel that still has the prophetic and the revolutionary and the direct contact with God, all of that spirit and ethos that is embodied in the mountain of Sinai. But all of this tells us something very important, which is that Moses belongs at Sinai, and David founded Zion. And if Moses had led the people into the land, there could not have been those two contrasting personalities that embodied those contrasting positions. For David, those contrasting traditions. For David to arise, Moses has to die. For a new tradition to be born, the old tradition must make way. And that same dynamic and that same reality is true in every life, in every institution, and in every family. Families have patriarchs and matriarchs. They are wonderful and powerful personalities. But the only reasons they are matriarchs and patriarchs is because the matriarchs and patriarchs who preceded them have passed away. In order for someone to grow, there must be an open path. In order for there to be Zion, Sinai had to be finished, had to be over. The people had to leave the mountain of Sinai, or they couldn't come to the mountain of Zion. They had to bury Moses to crown David. And that dynamic, as painful as it is for everybody, is not only about our tradition. It's about the cycle of life and death. Everyone wishes that that which they know and that which they love and the people whom they cherish would stay forever. How could we want otherwise? After all, we love them. But if they do, then there will be no one new to love and no new traditions. There will be no Zion if the people spend their lives with Moses at Sinai. Part of the Yisker service is the realization that pain and necessity are all part of the same reality. That the celebration of life must end in the morning of death, or there will be no celebration of new life. That the people whom we cherished, we could cherish because those who preceded them had handed on the baton of life to them. That the Torah finishes with death because death is the universal reality. It's the Torah's way of saying God created the world at the beginning, and built into the very structure of the world is death. If it happened to Moshe, surely it will happen to everyone. That people's legacies may be indispensable, but no individual is indispensable. And that's why, at the very end, the last parsha is called Vizot HaBracha, and this is the blessing. Because it is not only the blessing of Moshe's life, it is also the blessing of Moshe's death, which allows Joshua and the judges and Shmuel and David and ultimately, God willing, the Mashiach, the Messiah, to one day arise. Because, of course, the Messiah comes not from the line of Moshe, but the line of David. And in order for there to be Zion, we must leave Sinai. So on this day of Shmini Atzeret, when we recall during the Yizkor service those whom we have loved and those who have died, we recognize that there is a certain justice and a certain necessity and even a certain kindness to the rhythm of God's world. That, it is true, takes away those we love, but also allows us to live and allows us, God willing, to love anew. Shabbat Shalom.